In the name of Lord Jesus Christ, we start our Sabbath service this morning. Angie is scheduled to speak this morning, and I believe she had a food poisoning last week. So I'm filling in her place to speak this morning, and I'm also asking all of you to keep her in our prayer. I'm going to continue to study the topic of seeking God's will. In my last section, we have looked into many reasons why a person cannot see God's will. And the reason I chose this topic because back in 1995, when I came back to God, my life was greatly touched by God's love. And I was compelled. I was very, very touched by God's love. But when I came back at that point, when I came back to God back in 1995, I found myself sitting in totally darkness in my life. I don't know which way to go. At that point, I realized what I did, the direction of my life was wrong before. But yet, I don't know what would be my new direction of my life. Which part of my life needs to be changed? That's why I spent a lot of time. I devoted my life to find out for myself which way should I go in my life. And I would like to share with you the topic. I finally realized the purpose, the direction of life is to do God's will, not our will. And since that point, it has become a challenge in my life to do God's will, because then everything is different than what I have used to do before. So we would like to continue to study the subject. In my last section, I mentioned about many reasons why a person cannot see God's will. One of them is it could be our weakness. You probably would not understand why my weakness has anything to do with my ability to see God's will. The thing is this. For example, if you have a very hot temper, every time in the midst of conflicts, your temper shoot up, you know. And at that point, you will be blinded with your own weakness. At that point, you cannot see even beyond your nose. You cannot, not mentioning about seeing God's will. If you could think about it, if you could stay calm in the midst of conflicts, although you may feel you are mistreated, you may feel you are the victim in that situation, but if you could really overcome your weakness, your temper, whether it's an argument between husband and wife, and a conflict in a family, in a church, it doesn't matter. In the midst of conflicts, if every time in the midst of a conflict, your temper, you know, click and went out of control, that's the end of it. You cannot see God's will. So we all need to try our best to work on every weakness that we have, so that in the midst of conflicts, we could stay calm. Only when we are able to stay calm, then even you will be very surprised. Even in the midst of conflicts, you could see God's will. And you will begin to wonder why I have not been able to see all that beautiful wisdom before. That is because you are blinded by your own weakness. Another weakness could be your pride. And this is going to hurt you too. Again, you're going to wonder, why will my pride affect my ability of seeing God's will? Yes, it will. Because in every situation, you always see things from your perspective, your own perspective. Go, well, I am more educated. I am experienced. I'm in my 40s. You know, these young kids don't know what they are doing. It is a pride. But many times, God may speak through a young kid. It's not always the experience, the wise is always wrong. Your pride, if you cannot go back to the humility like a child, many, many times you cannot see God's will. Because your pride, yourself, always stand before God. And that will blind you. That will blind you. There are many, many kind of situation. Another possibility is that if you are not devoted to see God's will, you will not be able to. If that seeking God's will is not a priority in your life, it's just something, okay, I'm a good Christian, you know, we should try to stay on the track, you know, most of the time, you know. But yet it's not a priority. You might not be able to see God's will. Let's turn to Jeremiah chapter 29. Verse 13. You will seek me and find me when you seek me with all your heart. This is a very, very simple verse. I'm going to read it again. It's a guarantee. This is a reflection by Prophet Jeremiah. He said, you will seek me and find me. How and when? When you seek me with all your heart. This is my favorite verse. When I was in a total darkness, I don't know if God will ever look at me and my situation. If I'm worthy for God to see me. If I'm worthy, even if I try, if God will even bother to come to my life. But this verse gave me a tremendous courage. It's a guarantee. God is not partial. God is not partial. It doesn't matter your background. It doesn't matter how you have been before. But today, if you came to Him, you have changed. You came to Him. And seek God with all your heart. You will find Him. Many of us, you know, living in our society, we know when we do things, you know, the order how we do things are important. For example, you know, a lot of us take a lot of medication, pills, you know. Some medication need to be taken in a certain way. This pill need to be taken first and the second and the third. The order is, it's not that, okay, I'm supposed to take 5 pills. Wait, I took this 5 pills, then I'm fine. No, the order of your taking medication are important. When you apply a job, you know, although you finish everything on your desk, your boss might not be happy. Your boss may accuse you of not being able to prioritize your task, meaning that you need to do the most important first and the second, you know, prioritize all the tasks on your desk. Although you may tell your boss, I finished everything. But, well, the order that you do things is not right. So that's going to hurt you. In the same way, when you come to God's presence, seeking His will, the order, how you manage your life is very important. You need to seek God's will first. This order is very, very precise and particular. It's not that, I finish everything in my life. You know, I go to work. You know, I do this and that. Okay, at the end of the day, you know, now let's see. What should I do for God? No, it's not going to happen this way. It's very, very precise. Let's look at Matthew. Matthew chapter 6, verse 33. Seek first His kingdom and His righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. If you read this verse, I have read this verse many times, and I go, oh, yeah, we need to see God's kingdom and righteousness. But one day, when I came to this verse again, I noticed seek first. Only when you see first His kingdom and righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. Can you see the order right here? This order might not be important to you, but it is very, very precise and important when it comes to seeking God's will. Many of us, when we come across difficulties in our life, we kneel down, God, please, you know, give me a job. I'm unemployed, you know. God, please help me this and that, you know. Help me to get good grades. I'm applying school, you know, help me. Every time we treat God like a emergency box, you know, when we have problem, we come to God. But do you know something? Remember, because God promised that if you come to me, I'll help you. But there is a condition. There is a condition. Verse 33, in your life, you need to seek God's kingdom and righteousness first. If you fail to seek his kingdom and righteousness first, every day you come to God, you treat God like a genie, you ask, you know, all you want, all you desire in your life. Many times you may be disappointed and you may misunderstand God, that God is partial. When God bless this brother and sister with so many blessings, but God did not even bother to look at me. Every time when I kneel down, I request it, I pray and pray with all my heart, but none of my requests has been answered. Why is that? You might misunderstand God and feel very, very discouraged. Because you come to look at this verse, because you may fail to see God's righteousness first in your life. And that may be the reason. When you see God with all your heart every day, you will begin to see God's will in your life. You will begin to see God's will. You will, at that point, you will begin to see challenges in your life. Before that, you might not be able to see, sometime, from time to time, you'll see different challenges in your life. But when you see God's will wholeheartedly, that's when you begin to see the challenge. In 2004, for a Christian living in 2004, what are our challenges? I could see one big challenge in my life. That is to lead a very simple life. You probably, when we talk about simple life, many of you will say, oh, my life is very simple. I'm not like those friends of my party day and night. You know, I have a very simple life, you know. The definition of your simple life may be different than what God thought. That's why Paul said in Romans chapter 1:17, we all need to study God's word. Because in this gospel, let's turn to Romans chapter 1, verse 17. I was very touched by this verse. From the 16, Paul said, I'm not ashamed of this gospel because it is the power of God. But then when you come to verse 17, he said, for, because in the gospel, a righteousness from God is revealed. Your standard will be different than my standard and her standard. But it doesn't matter what your standard, my standard are. It really doesn't matter. To see God's will, we need to look at the standard and the perspective of God. And where will I be able to find those standards? Paul said in Gospels, in this gospel. That's why this gospel is so precious. Why it is so precious? Because in this gospel, a righteousness from God, not a righteousness from Paul, no. Not a righteousness from Peter, no. A righteousness from God is revealed in this gospel. That's what makes this gospel so precious and powerful. That's why Paul said this gospel is the power of God. Because only and only in this gospel you could see God's righteousness. God's righteousness. And because only when you understand God's righteousness, then you can apply the correct standard in your life. Before that, you may apply your mom's standard, your dad's standard, you know, your family, the family value from your parents. But only when you understand the gospel, you will understand the standard and the perspective of God, and your life will begin to change. This truth, this gospel is very precious. It's beautiful to listen to. Many of us, when we come to attend a Sabbath service, our hearts are touched by the truth. Our life is touched by the truth. But this truth is useless if you don't practice it. It's beautiful. It's itself is very nice, it's wonderful. But the power of the truth comes from when you really believe in everything and you begin to apply and practice and struggle with this truth every day in your life. That's when the power is gonna come on you, and that's when you're gonna see God in your life. If imagine yourself, if you live in Jesus' time as a Christian, your challenge will be courage. You need to be very, very brave to face persecution. Sometimes, I don't know if I could be that brave, you know, that to choose God instead of my life. But sometimes when I look at the history, I thought it's quite interesting that in Jesus' time, after the spread of gospel, after Peter stood up and preached, many people believe in God, and then the severe persecution followed. Many people, their life was totally changed. They chose God instead of their life. And many of them gave up their life because of the say for the sake of gospel. But if you look at the history of that time, whether you die early or later, for those who refuse to, who were afraid to give up their life, they die anyway. Because when later on, when the Roman, you know, attack city of Jerusalem, when the great fire, you know, happened to Jerusalem, the day when the temple was burned down, there is a book called The Day the Temple Was Burned. It was a very good book. Practically, everyone died anyway in that tragedy on the day when the temple the hero built burned down. The entire city, all the Jewish was, you know, massacred, killed in a very tragic way. Their life ended anyway, whether they chose to follow God or those who were afraid to, you know, die for God. They end up all died in a very tragic way anyway. But now look at our life in 2004. You will not believe that our challenge is to take what we need. You might think this is kind of interesting, you know. Our challenge is to take what we need to follow God, you know. Never, never a generation enjoy such a high degree of freedom like our generation. Never, never a generation. If you look back of the history, even in Greek, you know, Roman Empire, people, Roman citizens were so proud of the great, high freedom they enjoy. But we, the freedom we enjoy, we surpass those generation. The choices, our life, the everything that are available to us has surpassed all the generation. Never, never a generation of Christian. Our challenge is to take what we need. Let's look at Ecclesiastes chapter 1. King Solomon observed a very interesting life phenomena. He said, chapter 1, verse 7, all streams flow into the sea, yet the sea is never filled, never full. Have you noticed this situation in our life? All streams flow into the sea, yet the sea is never filled. And then he further said in verse 8, the eye never has enough of seeing, nor the ear its fill of hearing. Our desire is like that ocean. Many of us think, oh, if I have, especially the young brother, if I have my dream car, I'll be so happy, you know. That will really make my life happy, but that's not true. Then later on, after the car, you want something else, and thereafter, you know, one after another one. It's our life, our desire is exactly what Solomon described in Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verse 7. It's like a stream continue to flow every day. That ocean never fall. It's never full. Our desire will continue to satisfy our desire every day. Feel, but our desires never feel. Never. No one in this world will say, I'm completely happy. I have everything I wanted in my life. I'm happy, 100% happy. No, you always have something that you say, if I could get one more thing, you see, that would really make my life very happy. That's the situation in our life. And in Revelation, Bible said Babylon, if you look at the Babylon is a cup that makes all nations drunk. Babylon, that tells you the luxuries, the lifestyle in Babylon was so much that make all the people who live inside in that generation drunk. They become drunk. They indulge themselves in that lifestyle. But I would say, if Babylon made all nations drunk, I believe people in Southern California, the lifestyle made everyone drunk too, you know. This lifestyle could be very, very attractive, you know, that everybody enjoy, you know, our life practically live from one vacation to another vacation, you know, parties, you know, many enjoyment that we enjoy. So sometimes in order to see God's will, we really need to pull ourselves from this, all this enjoyment. Paul said in 1 Corinthians, let's turn to 1 Corinthians. Chapter 9, verse 25. Let's start from 24 first. Do you not know that in a race, all the runner run, but only one gets the prize? Run in such a way as to get a prize. Verse 25. Everyone who competes in the games goes into strict training. They do it to get a crown that will not last. They do it to get a crown that will not last, but we do it to get a crown that will last forever. Very interesting. Paul said, if you live, you know, loosely, your lifestyle is very loosely, you know, without discipline, that's not gonna work. To get our prize, our salvation, we need to picture ourselves like a, you know, like a person compete in a game, running a race. Many people running a race, but only one gets a prize. But then he said the most important thing is in verse 25, that everyone who competes in a game goes into a strict training. If you are interested in this competition, if you bother to enter this race, you really want that eternal crown for your life, you need to enter the race first. But before you could enter the race, you need to go through strict training first. By just entering the race, you know, without changing anything in your life, it's not going to work. It's not going to work. If you take a few moments, look at our life, you know, if you go to work, you know, after work, you know, you prop yourself in the couch, then turn on the TV, begin to watch your TV, watch until like 11:30. Oh, time to go to bed. Then you went to bed. Day after day, you know, your life is very loose. You know, there's no training, there's no discipline. You are not going to get anywhere. Everything begins from our daily lives. If you determine to enter the race, look at your life. You need to change your lifestyle. You need to discipline. You need to go through a strict training to be able to compete in the game. Now, we're going to look at another aspect. Okay, I think I said enough. You know, I need to change my life, you know, but how can I cope with this challenge? Let's learn from one example in the Bible. When I study that story, I always wonder how was he able to do it? How was he able to choose the way he did? Let's look at Abraham. Let's turn to Genesis chapter 13. Many things happened in Abraham, but there is this event that we could learn a lot. Let's look at Genesis chapter 13. Let's start from verse 11. When it came to the point when Abraham and Lot, they did not have enough pasture to support their herd. They decided to separate. So Lot chose for himself the whole plain of Jordan and set out toward the east. Abraham let Lot choose first, and Lot took the best portion. Now, if we move toward the last part of 12, and Lot pitched his tents near Sodom. Now the men in Sodom were wicked. Verse 14, the Lord said to Abraham, after Lot had parted from him, lift up your eyes from where you are and look north and south, east and west. All the land that you see, I will give it to you. Now, let's look at this event very carefully, because there are a lot of lessons to be learned from this event. Lot chose the best portion, which is fine. They both live in a tent before. But if you look at the end of the verse 12, Lot slowly moved his tent, and he pitched his tent near Sodom. At this point, Bible did not say he moved into the city of Sodom. He did not. Sometimes when I see that part, I really laugh, you know, because I could see sometimes we really resemble Lot. You know, God gave us many instructions. You know, you need to leave. As we try to simplify our lifestyle, we will move to the border. You know, we'll move to the border. Hey, Lot is probably thinking he's mine. I'm not moving into Sodom. I'm just pitch my 10-year Sodom so I could have the convenience, you know, buy my stuff from the city. You know, it's more convenient this way, but I am not living in the city. But this is very dangerous by moving the tent so close to the city. On the other hand, Abraham stood his ground. He did not even move toward the city. Many of you might think, well, you know, it's not a hard choice. You know, what's so good about Sodom? In their time, the comfort and the protection from a city is very important. If you live in a city, you will be protected by the city wall. You can close a gate at nighttime, and that's the city gate is really going to provide you safety. Everyone have a desire to choose the best for his family. If I place myself in Abraham's shoes, I would definitely move my family to the city because I would be very concerned about the safety of my family. And it's my job as a head of household to always choose the best for my family. But why Abraham did not? Instead, he chose to continue to live in a tent. We never lived in a tent before, but living in a tent is not as comfortable as living in a house, in a house in a city. The tent, you suffer from the weather, the harsh weather in the wintertime and night times. It's not comfortable. It's not convenient. It's not safe. Let's look at Hebrew chapter 11. Let's start from verse 9. By faith, he, that's Abraham, made his home in the promised land. Like a stranger in a foreign country, he lived in tents, as did Isaac and Jacob, all his children, who are the heirs with him of the same promise. Not only Abraham, his children also lived in tents. I was very touched by this verse, because if you cannot see why as a Christian we need to live in a tent, although living in a house in the city is very, very comfortable, but when you choose, Abraham chose to live in a tent for a reason. Number 10, for he was looking forward to the city whose foundation, whose architect and builder is God. Today, if we cannot see our eternal hope, we will not be able to choose correctly. We will not be able to. The reason is, it's easier to choose and make decision based on something you can see. But Abraham was able to make this choice. This is a very tough choice. To choose to live in a tent all his life. It's not that he loved his neighbor. He said he lived like a stranger among the foreigner. But he chose to live in a tent. And that means a lot of determination. We should not ever waver whenever it comes to choosing our lifestyle from this verse. You know, from this verse in our heart. That when it comes to choose our lifestyle, every luxury that we add to in our life, we got to think twice about it. Before, I never think twice about it. You know, every luxury is good. Every comfort, it's good. If I can afford it, that's wonderful. Thank God. That's my blessing. No, it's not. It is not. Why wouldn't Abraham think, hey, Abraham is not poor. He's rich. He can afford it. If he moved into Sodom, he could afford to, you know, acquire a big house and live comfortably in the city. He could afford it. This is not a matter. Why Abraham did not say, oh, thank God. God really blessed my life good. So it's time for me to choose the best for my family to move in the city and enjoy the blessing from God. Because that is not blessing from God. Many times we misunderstand. We misunderstand. So we need to, if you lose your step, you lose your foot, just, you know, sometimes you will be tempted a little bit, then that's it. Just like Lot, slowly pitch. You know, he's not moving to the city. He just want to be near the city. That is even very dangerous. So we should never, never lose our position in that. Seeking God is a lifelong process. It's a continuous process. Sometimes in my imagination, I wish God said to me, Caroline, if you could turn in 1,000 hours or even 10,000 hour reflecting moments that you have followed God, devoted to God, then you made it. You made it to heaven. I'll be the happiest person in this world. Because I think many of us could easily produce, you know, 1,000 moments that reflecting that you have devoted your life to God. But it's not this way, though. It's a continuous process that you follow God yesterday, today, every moment in your life. After Saturday, when you leave church, you continue to follow God. You struggle. You continue. It's a continuous process. It's a continuous process. It does not stop. Many of us, we will be very happy and content. Go, oh, I serve God, you know, every Saturdays, you know, I did this and that. I did this and that and that and that. Oh, I have earned so much credit. I'm good. I'm qualified. No, it's not. It's an undivided devotion to God continuously, every moment. And that's where the challenges come from. And the trick is this. If you don't practice on small manners, you won't be able to choose correctly when it comes to the medium-sized matter. And of course, you won't be able to see clearly when it comes to a major decision in your life. The trick is you need to start practicing small things in your everyday life. From your language, from your speech, from how you teach your children. Even when it comes to buy things for your children. Is this right? You know, every small things. You don't practice on small things. The problem is that your life will be full of inconsistency. When I say inconsistency, some people call it hypocrites, you know. No one said, wanted to be a hypocrite, meaning that, you know, on Sabbath you behave one manner, but when you leave you behave another manner. But it is not really hypocrite. Problem of inconsistency. Because when your mind is focused, you are devoting. When your mind is focused. But when your mind loses the focus, you become yourself. And then when people look at you, you become a hypocrite because, you know, sometimes you appear to be holy, sometimes you are all by, you know, become yourself. So that's why it's important. If you don't practice from the small things, then your life is not consistent. So it's very, very important as we struggle. So when I was young, you know, I came to church, you know, I would see some people behave one manner and the other manner outside of church. And that really grossed me out, you know. I could not stand it. I would think in my heart, oh, oh, those hypocrites, you know. But now I'm older, I finally realize that no one is hypocrites. They just try to struggle to be like God in their life. And sometimes inconsistency show as a result when you are not focused, you know. So now I understand that it's important. And as we practice more and more and more and more, hopefully, you know, we will be closer to God and we will be more consistent before God. If you look at Abraham's life, God appeared to him many, many times. Many of us might think that I'm not Abraham, you know. I cannot be like him, so God never appeared to me. You know, I'm just an ordinary person. But think about it, in a healthy relationship, if there, it's a responsive relationship. When you follow God, God responds. If you do something, God responds. When you feel off track, God chastises. You know, it's a responsive relationship. That's the type of relationship we need to have with God. If you cannot feel God, you need to look at your life very closely. Something is very wrong. If you cannot feel God at all, and you claim yourself as a Christian, something's very wrong. If you cannot feel God, that means God did not come to your life. And there's a serious problem on this relationship. We need to fix it. Recently, we adopted a puppy. And I was brought up in a city. I'm very, very afraid of animals, including dogs, you know. So in the same way the dog could sense it, there are four people in my family. When the kids are home, the puppy never come to me. He always go to the kids. When there's no one at home, the puppy will look at me and go to the cage. You know, oh, sad. You know, very depressed. No people is around this house, you know. Even the dog could sense it, you know, when you don't like him. I never tell him I don't like him, you know. I just am afraid of a dog. But even the dog could sense you don't like him. Don't he look at you? He went straight to the cage. One day, Paulina said, "He said, Mom, the name of our dog is Teddy." She said, "Mom, if Teddy know that you are the one who pays for everything, he will really love you." You know, and I go, "Oh, yeah. I wish he could see that." You know, sometimes in a relationship, you cannot feel God. It doesn't mean that God doesn't exist. Sometimes you cannot feel God's love. It doesn't mean that God don't love you. There is a problem. Maybe it's our weakness. Maybe it's our lifestyle standing between you and God. But just because you cannot feel God, it doesn't mean that God is not there. To conclude, let's look at a very important verse. To live according to God's will, it's not an option. It's really not an option. Let's look at 1 John chapter 2. Verse 17. The world and its desire pass away, but the man who does the will of God lives forever. This is a very simple verse. We all desire to enter into the eternal heavenly kingdom after we depart from this world. But the truth is, if you cannot enter into the kingdom of God when you are living on this earth, there is no reason to believe that you will be and enter into the eternal heaven when you leave this world. Does that make sense to you? If your life cannot do God's will, if in this life that you live on earth, you cannot enter into the kingdom of God on earth, you really cannot expect when you leave this world, God will accept you and you will be entered into that kingdom. Let's all bow our head and pray in silence. Amen.